You're listening to How to Business, a podcast by the Small Business Development Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I'm Madison from the SBDC team, and today's episode is Your Guide to Accounting. Our guest today is Greg Compton with Chat365, and the conversation will be led by one of our counselors, Sarah Madsen.
Hey, Greg, welcome to the How to Business podcast.
Hey, Sarah, how are you?
Doing well. So I want to start off by you telling us a little bit about your background in Chat365 and what you guys do. I think that'll kind of help frame the conversation and your expertise a little bit.
Yeah, well, we do a lot at Chat365, but we're probably best known for our bookkeeping, accounting, and financial consulting type services. We take an interesting approach to accounting and bookkeeping. We approach everything from a management accounting perspective, and don't want to go into a whole lecture about all the different types, but there are four or five different types of accounting, but we focus really on management accounting, where we want to provide data, timely and accurate financial information to the business owner so they can make good business decisions. It's very granular, and because we do it that way, we're able to support all the other types of accounting, tax, audit, financial accounting for external parties. So that's what we're really known for. And we have a kind of a unique business model. We don't charge by the hour, generally speaking, but everything we do is flat rate, anywhere from $250 to $500 a month. We can provide full accounting and bookkeeping services for our clients.
What kind of clients do you work with?
It's really across the board. We started here in Chattanooga, so we're Chat365, Chattanooga all year round, right? That was our idea. But as it turns out, about 80% of our clients are outside of Tennessee. Texas, Colorado, California, Pennsylvania, Maine, all over. The types of clients really range from venture-backed startups, companies that are just raising millions of dollars from investors, and they're used to losing money all the time, trying to do those rockets to the moon sort of things, all the way down to candle makers, coffee shops. I think our smallest client right now is an individual video production company. So it's one guy with a video camera making videos for people, and he's having a good life, and we're helping him run his small business.
Well, Greg, I'm super excited to have you on the podcast. And when I first reached out to you, I wanted to talk to you about how businesses can make their operations more efficient, because I know that's what you do to make your business run smoothly and be able to offer great pricing for your clients. But as we are hashing it out, it seems like we kind of narrow down into talking more about accounting processes and how that can really drive the efficiency of your business. So I hope that we can really make the accounting and bookkeeping as fun as possible. And I think our listeners will get a good takeaway of a different perspective on accounting than maybe what they've thought about before. So I really just kind of want to dive right into it, if you're ready.
No, I'm ready to dive into it. I'll tell you, accounting is actually really fun. And I think it gets a bad rap because sometimes people, relative to the core businesses that people are doing, if you're doing a video production or software, they're really wrapped up in that. But the accounting part is sort of back office, but it is fun when you get into it.
True, I agree with you.
Especially if you're making money.
Yeah, so what is the very first thing a business should do? If you're a startup business, maybe you have some money rolling in the door or expenses going out, what's the first step to getting set up to have your accounting operations in place?
I take a bit of an extended view of that. It's not just the accounting operations in place. I think it's really important for every business, can be a sole proprietorship even, to make sure they put their professional business team in place. With that, if you're a big company, you're going to hire these people. These are people that are going to be part of the company. But when you're just getting started, you need to find those great partners. You need to find a good banker, even if it's just to have a checking account. Get the right checking account. You need to get a good insurance person, because it kind of stinks to build everything up and then lose it because you're underinsured for something foolish that happens. And then, of course, it's always good to have a lawyer on standby, put one on retainer to just help out with the contracts and things as they come up, because you can't be expected to know everything about all these. And then finally, it is the accounting. And you don't necessarily have to go get the biggest, most expensive of all. You don't need the $400 an hour or $1,000 an hour lawyer, just someone who can help you out. Same thing with accounting. If you're just getting started, you don't necessarily need the partner at the big CPA firm. You just need someone who can help you answer those questions. So at least get a bookkeeper in there to help you categorize your transactions. There's an old saying that says, what gets measured gets managed, and what gets managed gets done. From the accounting perspective, you just need to know what's happening in your company. At a fundamental level, that's what accounting and bookkeeping's doing.
Okay, well, let's talk about that then. What's the difference between a CPA, an accountant, a bookkeeper?
That's a really good question. Because a lot of people, they start thinking about, oh, I need to get an accountant, and they go thinking about their taxes. That's what I did. I got to be honest. My first business, I think I need an accountant. I need to do my
one
taxes.
Time a year, maybe.
One time a year, I need to go get my taxes done, so I need to go find a CPA and do that. So accounting, it is broad. There's a whole lot of specialists. Much like in law, you're not going to get a good trial attorney isn't necessarily the best one to do contracts. And if you don't know that yet, hey, there's a tip for you. We break it down into three different areas. At a more fundamental level, there's accounting and finance. When you get into business, you see these two things. Fundamentally, accounting is everything that's historic, everything that's happened in the company up until today, up until this very instant, recording historical transactions. When we talk about finance in that perspective, we're really talking about the future. We're talking about projections, cash flows, what's going to happen in the next few months, the next few years. Just focusing on the accounting part right now, fundamentally, there's really three different levels in accounting. You need a bookkeeper, and bookkeepers are the lowest level of accounting, if you will. They're more technicians. They're just there to categorize transactions. That's really what you want a bookkeeper to do. They're going to make some decisions, but they're going to make decisions that are bounded by what the accountants tell them to do. Maybe they're going to go through a bank statements and say, oh, this McDonald's receipt, that's for meals. Oh, this gas, this goes in the transportation budget. Right. They're just making those basic categorization decisions. And generally, you pay less money for that type of service. And then you move into accountants, and accountants are trained professionals, have at least a bachelor's degree, sometimes a master's degree, and sometimes they can go on to get a certification, become a CPA. Okay. We'll talk about that in a second. You've ever heard the term creative accounting?
Yes.
Okay. Well, creative accounting, that can go both ways. But what's interesting is a lot of accounting is creative. You need to account for things in different ways. Sometimes they go in this bucket. Sometimes they go in this other bucket. So some things can be an expense, for example. Sometimes they're research and development. Both of those are perfectly acceptable. It just depends on your situation. And you need an accountant to kind of help you walk you through that, much like you would a lawyer to kind of walk you through some basic decision making in a contract.
So not all accountants are CPAs.
Yeah, that's right. And so, yeah, a CPA is an accountant who has gone on to get at least a master's degree. Every state has different but very similar requirements. At least a master's degree in accountancy, perhaps an MBA. And they passed a series of certification exams with the state. They're brutal. Once again, I keep going to lawyers. People know heard about lawyers passing the bar. Well, it's not quite as important necessarily as that, but CPAs have gone through this next level, so they are certified to work with the public.
They're the ones that can sign off on your tax return, so they carry some risk
liability,
I assume.
They carry some liability, they have some professional services. A standard accountant, a non-CPA, can certainly do that, but there's a specialized certification. It's sort of the difference between really a doctor, a nurse, and maybe a CNA.
Okay, that's a great analogy. So one thing is we get a lot of clients who are just out there interviewing CPAs and accountants, and you already kind of touched on it in the beginning, but I do want you to kind of explain to us the five different types of accounting and what should small businesses be looking for.
Okay, so the five different types of accounting are finance, tax, audit, management, and then a really cool one called forensic.
Yeah.
And it's exactly what you think it is. It's just like CSI for money.
Finding the creative accounting.
It's the people chasing the bad creative accountant. It's really fun, but it's very specialized. A lot of those work for the FBI. Generally speaking, you're not going to need a forensic accountant if you've done everything else right, okay? But it does exist. It's really a fun place to play around. Touch on the other four, and these are the big four. I think about these and explain them to our clients in the terms of who is the audience for the information. And in financial accounting, the audience is what are called external parties, be they investors, maybe a bank, something like that. So if you're going to get a loan, they want to see, quote, your financials, profit and loss, balance sheet, statement of cash flows, right? We take a whole lot of the information, the real detailed information about a company, we wrap them up in little accounts with just top line accounts, as we call them, and we send it on. You can see things like revenue, cost of goods sold, expenses, net profit. That's really all you need. And you send those out to external parties, and it gives you a sense of what the business is doing, but not maybe the secret sauce or some of the details of it. And that's financial accounting. Tax is pretty simple. The intended audience for taxes, the government.
Right.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's just all there is. And the government has lots and lots of rules. There are certain tax preparers that are not accountants. There are accountants doing it. There are CPAs that sign off on more complex ones. So taxes for the government. That's all there is to that. Audit can be for many things. You can actually have an outside party, maybe an investor that wants to invest in a company and says, well, I'm not going to put my money in here until I can trust what's going on. For this part of audit, it goes really down to the details about how do the processes within the company work such that we can trust the data that's being presented on the financial reports. So audit is validating financial reports. You can also audit taxes. That's where that goes. It's just validating the underlying transactions. And then finally, there's management accounting. This is what I love. I think this is really where the efficiencies come in. This is where we really keep score, the tactical part of the business world. And for management accounting, the intended audience is management. If you want to make good decisions in your company, you need to know, where is my revenue coming from? What are the various different places? Same store, year over year sales, this revenue channel. What are my costs down to like the resistor level on a PCB. And all the expenses are broken down in a lot of detail as well. What we talk about in management accounting is you want to collect data at the most economically efficient level possible. It's as granular as possible, but also economically efficient. Sometimes it doesn't make sense to spend $10 to record a $1 deposit. That's the balance we have in management accounting, is finding for each company, how detailed can we capture the information so that we can make good business decisions?
Yeah, it's totally driving the business decisions. Where can I save money? Where's my money going? How can I change the way we are bringing in revenue?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's driving, but it's informing. It's another data point. Because there's also the intuition of the entrepreneur. You got the vision and the strategy, and you're saying, hey, when we make a change in a company, how do we know the effect of that change? I had a great guy I worked with in a company previously. He said, Greg, the scientific method. You change one thing, you measure the result. And that's where management accounting comes in.
And I like it because a lot of entrepreneurs live in like the gray area, very black and white. So I feel like a lot of times the numbers can really tell the story. And it may be the same story as their vision, but sometimes it's not. Sometimes their money's not going where they think it is or whatnot. So let's talk about with management accounting. There are three primary reports that entrepreneurs and small business owners should be looking at to be able to manage their business and make these decisions. Let's talk about those reports.
Okay. Those three reports you're talking about, income statement, balance sheet, statement of cash flows. Those aren't necessarily just for management accounting. They're primarily financial accounting reports, but it's all the details that move into those.
Right. And these are also the same three reports that if you're getting funding,
that's exactly
banks
right.
are going to require. So these are just standardized.
These are the big three. These are the only ones that anybody cares about outside of management. So on those, let's start with the income statement, the profit and loss. And generally speaking, this is what most people think of when they think about financials. It has a few component parts, revenue, cost of goods, all your expenses, and this thing called net profit at the end of it. And everybody wants the net profit to get bigger. The only way you can really do that is increase your revenues and or decrease your expenses. I guess it's important to kind of say what's most important on there, right? Because I get this question a lot. Hey, what do I need to look for in my income statement, my P&L? What you're looking for really on that one is trends, because those are snapshots in time. Whether you're looking at monthly, weekly, annually, is my revenue trending up? That's what I'm looking for. Are my expenses trending down? I made a change to my business. Am I getting the result in my financials that I was expecting? So trends are the most important thing to look at on your income statement.
I can think of a good example for that right now is people who depend on a lot of supplies. So construction company, if they see the trends of their cost of goods going up, then after so many months, you might have to think, maybe I need to increase my pricing. Supply costs are going up. So that's kind of an example of how someone can look at trends.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't even know. If you use QuickBooks or a lot of other accounting software, that you can go in and run that report by month or compared to last year. So I encourage my clients to take advantage of all those tools and look at it every which way to really figure out the whole story over time.
That's right. And you can talk to your bookkeeper or your accountant or your CPA.
Or ask them to run these reports
for
you.
Say, run the reports, email them to me. We love this. We send out weekly reports to our clients and we talk to our clients. So you're going to get the big three. What else do you want to see? And then how detailed do you want to see it? And there's all these really cool settings you can put in there. Really, that's where an accountant comes in and says, well, what should you be looking at? What do we recommend you look at on here? What's important for your business?
Love that. So now balance sheet. I find a lot of people have no clue what the balance sheet is.
Yeah, so balance sheet, it's probably because we use these terms we don't use in the everyday world. We have assets, and everybody thinks asset like a house, right? Liabilities. Okay, I think we know what a liability is, like I owe someone. I don't know. What does that really mean? And then equity. Everybody likes equity. Sure, equity's got to be good. So the balance sheet just records what you own, who owes you. Those are kind of your assets. What do I own and who owes me that? It can be inventory, it can be property, accounts receivable. Then you have your liabilities, which are just who do I owe? If you buy things on net 30 terms, for example, from a vendor, you owe them that. If you get a loan, you owe them that. And then equity is just what's left over at the end. So it's pretty straightforward. And on the balance sheet, the thing you want to look at really is how much do I own? How much do I owe? The equity will take care of itself at the end of the day. And the only way you can affect equity is to get investors. A lot of people don't want to do that. Just put more money in the bank.
It's kind of another picture at the financial wellness of your business, outside of profit and loss and outside of money that's coming and going. You might have good profit, but what if you have zero assets in the company and you're super debt heavy? That's going to be a red flag to an investor or banker, for example.
Yeah.
So it just kind of gives a different picture of what kind of the behind the scenes of the business a little bit.
It's a different view on things. Profit and loss is what's happening. the balance sheet is, what's my financial state right now?
Yeah.
I used to have money in the bank, now I don't. Or I didn't used to have money in the bank, and now I do. That's a really good thing to know.
So, statement of cash flows.
The most confusing,
right?
Misunderstood report, but also has the most important line on it. Well, the statement of cash flows is where we get to take all this crazy accounting stuff. People hear about cash basis, accrual basis. If you're not an accountant, you don't really get this. I understand it. The statement of cash flows, it brings it all down to just cash, just cold, hard cash. Forget all these receivables and payables and liabilities and accruals, cash. And it really just says, here's how much cash I brought into the company this month. Here's how much cash I used to pay all my expenses. And here is how much is left over. This is the most important line on all financials. It's net cash provided by operating activities. There are two other sections of the statement of cash flows. Those don't matter as much. I mean, they do, but not really. That net cash provided from operating activities, if that's positive, you're doing good. You're bringing in more cash, cold hard cash into the company than is going out. If that's negative, you got to make some decisions. It's a red flag.
That's not going to last forever.
No. Sometimes you can have it go down negative, maybe in the off season, and maybe it's really big during the season for seasonality.
But you have to float it month to month.
You look at that trend, but that is the most important on anyone. And the problem is that a lot of businesses, especially when they're first getting started, they don't know about this. It seems really complicated. They don't get it. So they ignore it. They don't set up their accounting systems to be able to report this, and it can be reported automatically. And that's really where you get an accountant involved.
And we talked about this too previously, but how a lot of businesses just look at the cash that's in their bank account, and that's how they judge their cash flow, when there can be a lot more to the story than that.
Yeah.
So you really need the report to kind of pull in from all the sources and dump all the information into one report.
When you take all three of those financial statements together, they really tell the whole story of the health of a company.
Okay, so once a business owner has kind of gotten used to looking at these reports, know what they're looking at, what do healthy finances look like? How would you know you're in a good, healthy financial position?
There's one thing you can say generally about every company. This is across the board. If your revenues are bigger than your expenses, you're doing good. If the cash in the bank is going up, that's good. But that's way too high level. We all know this one, especially when things are kind of on the bubble, as we talk about. Sometimes they go up, sometimes they go down. What I like to look at are really just the longer terms. I'm going to look at historical trends, and so I can kind of project those into the future. Because no one has a crystal ball, but at least this data that comes from your financials will help you project a little bit better and give you a better sense of what's happening. For all of our clients, we kind of separate them into two different groups. We have the companies that are stable, they're making money, and they just want to say, how do we make more? So that we can either hire more people, we can give profit sharing. That's a big one that's coming up right now, especially in the profit sharing. We need to lower the risk so we can make sure the company is around, but we want to reward our employees. Once you promise something, you got to be able to keep doing that. That's a big trend right now. And then we have those companies that are kind of losing money on purpose right now because they're in heavy R&D and they're trying to do the big hockey stick growth. So for those companies that are making money kind of on the bubble, or they're moving into profitability and trying to get more profitable, we just look at trends and just dive a little bit deeper into, what does your sales pipeline look like, for example? What's your expense pipeline look for? You mentioned it earlier. If you're a contractor, builder right now, and a few months ago you started seeing lumber prices go up, you got to really think about, hey, how did we bid these jobs 6 months in the future? These are big things. So it's really different for each company when they're making money. And that's great because you're at a place where you can actually invest a little bit of money into getting more professional guidance. And that's really on the finance side of things. Now, for companies that are losing money, we actually have a couple of KPIs, the key performance indicators, a couple of calculations that we always keep in every single weekly report. My partner and I, Bren, we came up with this one working with startup companies. We call it the zero revenue run rate. Because if you're in a company, you're not making enough revenue to cover all your expenses. So what if it all goes away? What if we have to pivot? What if we have to completely change our entire business model? How long can we survive? It's all about survival. So we say, well, let's come up with a number that says how long we can survive if we have to change everything. What we do is we pretend that the company has zero revenue coming in, but they have all their expenses. So it's a really easy one. Look at your balance sheet and say, how much cash do I have in the bank? Look at the bottom of your profit and loss at the total expenses number. Divide the total money in the bank by the total expenses. That's your number. That's how many months you have to survive. And I want to see that ideally over 12 months. If your quote unquote business model growth plan is to lose money, you need at least 12 months to make any sort of massive changes.
We're talking about zero revenue.
Zero revenue. So we have to completely change everything.
Truly worst case scenario.
Yeah, we got to go from selling honey baked ham to being a trucking company. It's a complete pivot. But that's not really completely realistic, but it's a good one to have in your back pocket to just know, hey, we got 12 months to make some changes. So that's a good thing to have. The other one is, we call it just with revenue run rate. We don't really have a cool name board or anything. Take your existing revenue, take the last 3 months, maybe 6 months of revenue, average it out. Say, this is what our revenue is, not what we project it to be, but what we've actually accomplished and what we know we can accomplish, because this is all about lowering risk. Near 100% certainty on revenue. What you're going to get there is your net profit number. And so you divide all the cash in the bank by your net profit number, averaged over 3 or 6 months. That's how many months you're going to have to survive doing exactly what you're doing right now, if you don't grow at all, because we all know projections are just wishes. And I like to see that number over 18 months. A company is kind of losing money right now trying to grow. If their with revenue run rate is over 18 months and their zero revenue run rate is over 12 months, then I'm like, okay, you're healthy. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep chasing that goal. Start closing that gap until you turn into a profitable company. Then we're going to change our whole paradigm of how we view finances. Now we're talking about profit maximization, not loss minimization.
Okay, so this is a benchmark for companies to strive for. I should strive to be able to last 12 months with zero revenue. I mean, this is like ideal.
You know you're
in a good place if you're like, I got that, no sweat.
It allows you to really focus on your core business.
Well, I was about to say, like, I know we're talking about lowering risk, but actually I think this gives companies the opportunity to take more risk. If they run those numbers and they're like, okay, we could survive for 6 months or a year with zero revenue, maybe we could just go down this other...
Let's try something new.
Let's experiment. Let's see what we can really do here.
It's really great. One of our clients talks about having his war chest. I got my war chest. I can do that. You mentioned something about red flags, I think, maybe earlier. Maybe it was when we were prepping. And what we talk about is when we go below both of these metrics, I just raise the yellow flag. I'm like, hey, just be advised. But when you get down to maybe 90 days... Now you really need to pay attention because you may have to go into a triage sort of situation in your business. And then you're trying to avoid that. And even healthy companies that are making money month over month, they should really reserve some of that cash to build up their war chest, because we never know. Maybe a pandemic comes along. Let's keep that little nest egg. Let's keep an emergency fund in the bank. It's always a nice thing. And a company that's making good money, I'd like to see 6 months worth. From the finance side, we'll talk about where to hold that money so it's just not sitting there.
Pandemic kind of forced everyone to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. In one of our next podcasts, we are going to talk about disaster resiliency because there's so many other types of disasters.
Absolutely.
Whole other podcast on that topic. But the last thing I want to kind of touch on before we wrap up here is, why should a small business owner hire a professional instead of doing it themselves?
That's a really great question. It's sort of the $1 million question, even for the $100 business. Just to take a step back on that, why wouldn't a business hire a professional? Being around this for so many years, the answer comes down to this idea that a business can't afford it. I know what it's like to be a very small business. I remember my first business is many years ago, and I'm like, $100? And I didn't really understand the repercussions of that decision I was making. I was just trying to fumble my way through. The thing to realize about every small business is that that entrepreneur is an expert in their core business. They know everything there's to know about it. That's why they decided to take this risk and to make this leap. They can't be expected to be an expert in everything. What we found over time is that business owner, you're going to pay that price, whether it's today or a year down the road, because the repercussions of maybe shipping the wrong product, you can recover from that. The repercussions of misaccounting for something can be dire, especially when you start moving into tax. There are legal repercussions for certain things. So number one is just on a liability side. You just engage. But it still begs the question, what, I can't afford that. And thus you get into the hourly model. My recommendation now to any entrepreneur, any new business owner out there that's saying, I can't afford an accountant. I'm like, I get it. I 100% get it. What you need to try to afford, go to your TSBDC counselor. What you should absolutely unequivocally do is get counsel on how to set up your accounts and how to record your most basic financial transactions. If you ever encounter something new, ask advice. Pay for the advice as you go until you can afford to pay for the advice on a full-time basis, or you can pay to just have someone else take this off your plate. You scale it up as you go. Just about every firm that I know offers at least a 1 hour consultation.
Okay.
The TSBDC, yeah. I believe you guys have a Ask My Accountant.
We do, and we do some accounting advising as well, so we can help clients with that.
The very worst thing a new business owner can do is try to do it themselves unless they've had that training.
And I think they start out doing everything in the business themselves, and then once they get to a point where they need to transition, they're not used to it yet.
And I'll tell you, a transition from DIY, We actually, unfortunately, the vast majority of our clients that come through have some sort of issues that we have to restate for them, and it gets kind of expensive.
Yes, to go back and do cleanup work is so much more expensive.
I would have preferred they just called up and said, hey, Greg, how would I do a blah, blah, blah? And I'd say, oh, let me take my years of experience, my knowledge and everything, do it this way. I don't know if it's 100% correct, but you're at least in the right ballpark.
And another thing that entrepreneurs don't think about is the time that they're spending fixing their own messes or even just learning bookkeeping and accounting. Mm-hmm. It's a whole rabbit hole that they will spend hours upon hours upon hours. Mm-hmm. And it's not an efficient use of their time, and it's not their specialty unless they mm-hmm. are opening a bookkeeping firm.
That's what I say. If you're going to bootstrap it, bootstrap the accounting and bookkeeping. Ask for advice about something you don't know. Effectively have a firm or have your accountant. We do this. We actually have learning at Chat 365. I have a client, we'll say, hey, just call us up and we'll teach you.
Yeah.
We'll teach you to be your own bookkeeper. That'll keep your prices really low. So that's the follow-up to what do you do when you're bootstrapping. At the very minimum, once a quarter, get an accountant. It doesn't have to be a CPA, but it should be an accountant, not a bookkeeper, to review your financials and just say, yeah, these look okay.
Absolutely. And I love that you mentioned that they are more efficient, because I try to encourage the small business owners that have a little bit of the know-how and aren't terrified of numbers. I like for them to do their bookkeeping maybe the first month or two so they can kind of know how it works, what they're getting into, learn how to look at the reports. But then I tell them, as soon as you have enough, that should be one of the first things you outsource, because it can take up so much time. Mm-hmm. You will go down so many rabbit holes. I once spent an entire Thanksgiving day cleaning up books that I had messed mm-hmm. up. I could have easily have outsourced that, and they probably could have cleaned it up in like an hour.
Chat 365, Brent and I, we come from an internal accounting. That's something we didn't talk about, internal versus external.
Yeah.
Like when you hire a CPA or an accounting firm, you're hiring an external accounting firm. As your business grows, you're going to bring some of those bookkeeping and accounting functions inside. I mean, you're going to hire employees to do the job inside. Generally, those are going to be management accounting type of operations. Brent and I operated as internal accountants for many, many years together, and actually in a startup company. That's kind of how we met, kind of got this vision for what we're doing today. One thing we learned about the difference between what we do as internal accountants and versus external is that as salaried internal accountants, our entire goal was to be efficient. We got paid exactly the same amount of money in our salary, whether we did our job in 80 hours or 30 hours. Now, as long as the job got done, we got paid the same. And it was interesting to us how when we were going to our external counterparts, they got paid for exactly how many hours they input. That's just the model, and that's great. And there's certain places where that is absolutely necessary. We thought, hey, can we bring an internal approach to as external service providers? That's why we've gone to a flat rate sort of business model where we just charge, say, $500 per month to do all the bookkeeping and accounting for a company. What we've done is we've aligned the interest of us versus the business owner. If we see an efficiency that a business can take based upon all of our experience with our other clients and just in life, we're going to recommend it to them because it's going to make our life easier. We're incentivized to help our clients become more efficient in their financial and accounting operations because we frankly have to work less. Whereas if we were doing just a pure hourly, we may have to think about, oh, do we tell our client about this thing that used to take 10 hours that can really take two now? Because we're going to lose some money. So we've aligned our interests, and that's a little bit of a unique approach, and I think we're seeing more and more of that come along. There's still, the hourly approach is still valid, it's still there, but especially for small businesses, I would just be wary, because every dollar matters.
Well, we'll wrap this up with kind of giving some takeaways to our listeners. I think the first thing is, if you're at a place where you're ready to hire professionals, absolutely don't delay in hiring true professionals to help you with your accountant. Find people who are willing to produce meaningful reports for you and help you understand those reports and what you should be mm-hmm. looking for in those reports. Make sure you hire the right type of accountant and or CPA mm-hmm. so that you get someone in the right specialty. Also, feel free to meet with your TSBDC counselor if you want someone to review your financials and make recommendations mm-hmm. for you. We always ask our guests, and I'll ask you as well, what is the one piece of advice that you give to a small business owner?
You know, funny enough, I think we just did it, right? No, it's when in doubt, ask. When in doubt, ask. It's just the humility. It took me years and years to learn this one. It's one of the things that just comes with age, but if you can learn this early, great. You don't know everything, and whether it's accounting, whether it's legal, it's your business. Your business is your baby. You want to take care of your baby. You wouldn't wing it with a newborn, would you? You go ask some elders. in the community. Hey, this happens. How do I handle this? So your business is your baby. If you're ever in doubt about how to do something, go ask. You're not out there alone. And there are so many people out there that just want to see you succeed.
Thanks for listening to How to Business, a podcast by the Small Business Development Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. If you like today's episode, we invite you to subscribe to our podcast and to take a moment and rate it on the mainstream podcast platforms. The How to Business podcast is produced by Pod Topics in collaboration with the SBDC of Chattanooga. To learn more about Pod Topics, visit podtopics.com.